Welcome back, everyone, to the 14th episode of Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. This week, I'm so thrilled to be joined by Jeff Veal, administrator in Prosper, Texas, speaker, blogger, co-creator of Lead Up Now, and the Lead Up Chat on Twitter. Also, the one thing that he loves to be known as is a husband and a dad. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Jeff, as you know, the show is centered on leadership development. Your journey is a little bit different, and I'd love to hear your personal leadership journey and how you became an administrator.
For me, at a young age, when I was in high school, I knew that I loved people and wanted the opportunity to make a difference somewhere, somehow. And it just so happened for me that faith is a big part of that intersection story for me of being a leader. And so for many years, coming out of college and in my 20s, I had the opportunity to serve full-time in a ministry setting. And it was really there that I developed a passion and a calling for leadership and the development of people for something bigger and greater than themselves. I had the opportunity to have a lot of people invest in me and to show me what it was like to lead others and taking care of others before taking care of yourself and making certain that at the end of the day, you can put your head on your pillow and understand that you added value to other people. And I hit a place in my journey in ministry where I knew I had the ability to take everything that I had learned in my degrees and those experiences and pivot to education. And in doing so, I found myself in a wonderful place of elementary education. And I credit the people who surrounded me, my team, my principal, who really saw all of my previous experiences as an asset rather than a threat, because that venue allowed me just to continue to develop my skills as I went from working with middle school and high school students, particularly, to working with our youngest learners in the elementary setting. And from there, I knew right away, I think within my first year of education, I started working on my master's in administration. And I had the opportunity just over the next couple of years to hone that craft and transition probably fairly quickly to getting to serve in different places to influence at both my team level and then at a campus level. And found my desire in my heart, it was a hard one to step out of the classroom into more of that position at the campus level. I always tell people this, that you know your leadership should always extend beyond yourself, knowing that you have the opportunity to be a major influencer beyond just your sphere. So I think for a lot of folks, what they really need is somebody who will give them permission to step into that space. Often in my interactions with teachers, especially when we talk or we conference, it's giving them the question of, have you ever considered, and talking about building capacity in them and helping them to see that they have so much to say and so much to offer. And so one of the reasons why in my leadership journey, I get real joy out of the role that I serve in is partly to hopefully help instill or speak into what I consider my colleagues, in addition to the students that I have the opportunity to develop as leaders or to speak into them.
Were there any aspects of ministry that translated to educational leadership? And if so, how did that help you in your advancement to become an administrator?
You know, the thing I always tell people is that ministry and education, public education, are not all that different. It's all about equipping, investing, building people, all the relational skills that you learn. For me, I always tell people the story. It was a season in my life where I was talking with my students, with my volunteer teams extensively about living your life with purpose and passion. And so I found in the midst of challenging others, I was challenged and thought towards how do I missionally live for other people, knowing that it's that whole I've been blessed to be a blessing and to take that influence into a different arena. At every step of the way, thankfully, there have been people who are around me who've given me platforms to be able to do that. And in turn, I think really for all of us, it's about leveraging opportunities. And when we see opportunities for other people, we need to provide that for them. In education, we have a lot to learn about providing multiple on-ramps and to think in terms of the journey for people as escalators and not elevators, so that they can take steps to grow, and providing multiple pathways with leadership and it not be so flat, because we have a lot of people around us, when given the opportunity, will do some pretty incredible things in our schools. And it just so happens that I saw spaces, I stepped into those because people gave me the opportunity to do that. I knew the calling was never going to be bound, as I hope it wouldn't be for anyone, as this is the only thing I'm going to do with my whole life. There was a time in my life when I thought the only thing I will ever do is ministry. And then 11 years into that journey, there was a completely different door and completely different opportunity for me to walk through. And so I become pretty passionate about that whole never say never, because you never know where you will find yourself, and to be open to where that journey may take you.
When you first became an administrator, what was the most difficult part about the transition?
You know, that's a really great question, because I just shared with my own staff team this last week that I left the classroom on a Friday and I was an administrator on a Monday. And so I had come back into a school year completely prepared to be able to just really invest in my students, invest in my kids. The opportunity presented itself. I didn't personally prepare myself mentally and emotionally of what that would look like to have to leave my students, leave my parents, leave a campus that I was heavily invested in, and literally go all the way across town to a different culture, a different leadership, different dynamic, where I was very used to building the kind of relationships with my students that I had. That was a big transition for me within 2 days to wear a completely different hat. Thankfully, I had a lot of folks around me who let me fail forward and learn and grow. It was definitely a baptism by fire and a bit of an unusual experience. And I know that I was put into that place for such a time as this, right? If I wasn't thoroughly equipped to do it, the opportunity wouldn't have presented itself. So much of that learning curve was truly just about acclimating myself into a completely different culture than the one that I had been a part of. And for a while, just in complete honesty, you may feel a bit like a foreigner versus a native. And that's okay, because you are building your skill set and you're listening to people and you're building trust and you are showing and demonstrating that you are there to learn and not to walk through the door with 60 of your own really great ideas ready to change things. I knew that was important in light of the fact that I was moving in straight from the classroom midstream after people had already gotten their year up and running. And so I think that people showed me a lot of grace, especially those first months.
What are some characteristics that you believe every leader should possess in a similar position?
You have to demonstrate yourself as trustworthy. You have to build credibility with other people. And it probably doesn't start with talking. It probably starts with listening. You need to demonstrate a characteristic of empathy and a desire with which to understand a different point of view than the one that you currently embrace, perhaps, or that you own. There are so many opportunities that we have as leaders to think about the kind of questions that we ask our people when we walk into a position that can help us to be better informed. Simple questions such as, tell me more about, or what are your thoughts on? I do believe an important characteristic is being someone who is adept at asking questions and is inquisitive, that curiosity piece. is really important. It allows you to not only demonstrate the fact that you are a learner. I think it's important too that it demonstrates a sense of humility and that I don't have all the answers. You are way better informed than I am. I will reach a much better decision with you if I have all the facts laid out before me. I think that leaders in today's environment and culture have to be collaborative with their people. And you need to be open to understanding that all of us is better than one of us. Operating from a strengths-based perspective means that if we're doing this right, we're surrounding ourselves with people who excel in areas that are far superior to our own. One of the benefits that I really felt like I gained in not being in the public education sector for such a long time was making certain that you surround yourself with people who are not yes men or yes women, yes people, right? It's easy to find people who you can surround yourself with and it become an echo chamber pretty quickly. And so you need to make certain that you surround yourself. If we're hiring the way that we say that we are, we're hiring teachers, we're hiring counselors, support staff, other administrators who will challenge our thinking and then be behind us when the decision has to ultimately be made. And together, us build something and have a shared vision and have shared ownership because together we all own it. This idea that it's mine or that it's yours, to operate it and achieve at high levels for what is needed for students and our families, this is not one of ours, it's all of ours.
And so you have a unique experience because you're coming from ministry and then you go into teaching and then administration. So with that experience, did you feel like you had an ultimate goal or was there a certain aspect of education that you wanted to change?
I think for the first year, it's a lot of just eyes wide open and you are like any brand new person, regardless of if you've been in another profession. And thankfully, you know, Josh, there are so many incredible educators who came from another career path because they bring with them invaluable life experience. And so I look to hire a lot of people who've been in another career because they bring with them some really profound and ultimately important skills with them and the perspective. And so, you know, I don't think that the first year I had an agenda other than I knew I loved teaching and surrounding myself with people. And I wanted to be able to make a difference. You know, a lot of people look at education on the outside and wonder, what are they doing inside those walls? What do they do inside that building? And so I think for myself, a lot of my personal mission has been one of two things as I transitioned from a classroom into an administrative role. One was the work that I've been really grateful to get to do with Lead Up and Lead Up Chat, which is about empowering all leaders and moving the conversation forward in education about leadership and culture and growth and shifts, because I think that's important work. And then I think the other side too is my own personal mission to rebrand perceptions about education that exist. You know, I have the opportunity to be on the phone quite a bit with parents on a day-to-day basis. And we generally default to the area that we know, which is our experience. And for a lot of parents, their experience in a classroom was 20, 30 years ago. And I get the privilege to have a conversation and dialogue about really how much it has changed. And sometimes we get to completely recalibrate what those expectations are for good. And I love it when we can end a conversation. Maybe we've been talking about instructional practices. We've been talking about what our teachers are doing in the classroom. It may have to do with behavior. And they, a lot of times, I know the conversation has gone to a great place when, whether I'm meeting with a parent face-to-face or on the phone, where they say, wow, it's really refreshing to hear how much we are being thoughtful, thinking about the whole child or about their child and meeting their child's needs. And that at the end of the day, makes you feel really good to know that we may have created a small mind shift that, you know, they're going to go to grocery stores, they're going to go to parks, they're going to go to their kids' baseball, soccer games, and they're going to have a conversation about what they're doing over there is truly impactful.
As a lead learner, how do you instill discovery and growth within your staff?
Part of how we do that is truly, I'm just going to put it out there, backing off, listening to ideas and saying, go try it, go do it. Having a culture and an atmosphere that allows people to create. You know, we put a real emphasis this year on my campus of creating a culture that, and you fill in the blank, and some of ours is caring, communicating, cultivating, connecting, creating. And so for us, it begins with the leadership giving permission for people to think and to explore. And so when ideas come, allowing them to do that. Something else that my district has done is they've created a RISE program. And so our teachers get to submit these really amazing proposals of things that are, I don't like to use the word outside of the box. I like to think expanding the box or looking to really work within the box and push the boundaries. From that, you know, we get to mentor them on our own campus, and I get to see it working in their own classrooms. We try to empower our PLC leaders and our grade level cross-curricular teams to think about how can we take this idea and make it better. This isn't just any one of ours. And so that happens in those collaborative conversations. That happens with ideas. We just had a teacher-led team on our campus who just from their own desire created a really amazing organization around this whole idea of providing opportunities for teachers to build culture and to be innovative. And it's not administratively led at all. It's all from within. So you know you got something going right when you have from the grassroots people who feel permission to collectively organize, come together, know that we aren't, hopefully if we're doing it right too, that as an administrative team, that we're not just accessible, but we're approachable. Ultimately, we want to be both. You know, a lot of people talk about having an open door, don't they? Like, my door is open, come see me. But there's a difference between being accessible and approachable. Am I approachable with your ideas? Am I open to the possibilities? And then again, if we're thought partners with each other, we're going to push back and forth. And hopefully in the end, it's all grounded in, is this going to be a win at the end of the day for our kids? And is this something that's going to benefit our learning community?
And I'm glad you brought up campus culture, because for administrators, that's a really big topic. What do you think is the biggest barrier to a healthy campus culture?
I think, again, everything comes down to communication and how we cultivate our expectations. Whether you're in the classroom or you're on a campus, people will rise to the expectation you set for them. And so if as a leader, I have a very low expectation of what people are capable of doing, then that's probably what I'll get. However, if I have a culture where I am intent on not having blinders on, but making an investment in both the intangible and the tangible, then we can go somewhere. And it's in communicating and being honest about where you are, where you want to go, setting some targets and goals for those pieces. You know, we tend to want to come in and overwhelm a campus by changing everything. Well, it's understanding that there is a culture that's in place. Our goal is we need as many people rowing the ship with us as possible, not people ready to jump off the ship or having people walk the plank. And so as we communicate healthy expectations, as we listen to people, as we communicate with all stakeholders, what we start to find is that people have a voice, and then the voice turns into action. And then from there, the idea is that people feel a sense of ownership in this being something that we're doing together. Over time, as you start to shift a culture on a campus, you may have people who see it, look around, see the other teachers, see kids, see families, who have really caught the spark of what's happening, and they may self-select and decide this is not the place where I want to be. And as leaders, we should never want to be in a place where we encourage people to leave our building. However, we also need to be in a place to encourage people to understand that you need to go where you grow and where you feel that you can be the biggest difference maker. And so again, creating a culture of high expectations, of support, where we know that all of us together are going to be responsible for the messaging of that is critical.
So I love what you said about voice. What do you do on your campus to increase student voice?
First off, we got to start being okay with saying that school can be fun and that it should be fun. And so that's one place. I think another piece of student voice is how we on our campus put a lot of emphasis on, you know, what we would deem as performance tasks. So rather than tests or quizzes, students are really owning their own presentations. And so whether it's through choice boards or whether it's through the opportunity to choose from a menu of options or to be able to create whatever within kind of that scope of what is being studied is a possibility. I see it all the time where I will walk into a classroom, and if there are 25 students, I may see just about every single student doing something different from another student. Whether they are doing it where they're creating something, where they are getting a presentation, where they are working on a Chromebook, we're a one-to-one campus. So student voice and it being authentic to where they're able to demonstrate their ideas, they're able to show what they've come up with, what they've created. We also do it simply by having conversations with our students. I try to routinely stop and just kind of have a conversation and interview with a kid. Tell me what's going on in this class. Tell me what's happening with this. And so it's on a person by person basis and conversation that is happening with our administrative team. We put our heads together and we talk about what we've heard students saying. Our teachers, I feel, do a really great job. And I would encourage all educators that your teachers are having a pretty steady stream of formative feedback from students. So I know that most of our teachers, when they are doing anything at the end of the backside of a project or a presentation, will get that feedback from students. They'll collect it in some way, whether it's going to be through a Google form or whether they're just having a classroom conversation about what worked, what didn't work. Again, all great teachers know that if something's not working, their kids are going to tell them. And the smart ones will stop, make the adjustment, say, wow, okay, we're gonna rethink this and move forward. And the kids will go there with you. I would love to say for us, we do it by having these, you know, advisory councils, or we have these like weekly meetings with students in a really formal setting. It tends to happen more through our classrooms, through our clubs, and through just really organic conversations.
And in addition to your admin position, you blog and are very active on social media. How do you find your voice beyond the campus?
For me, it's been such a release and an opportunity to be able to hopefully take the things that I get to experience and either encourage or empower someone with that. There is an opportunity when you do this to interact with hundreds or thousands of people in any one day. And so you have a lot of different perspectives and a lot of input. And so I like to think of when we blog, when we are in chats, when we are doing direct messaging, whatever we may be doing, that input has an outlet somewhere, and that it hopefully is a way in which I am able to take all those learnings and invest in somebody else. You know, in the process of all of this, I like to think of it a lot less about what I'm giving to other people, but what I'm learning. So many of the ideas that I think to bring to my team or to talk with teachers, maybe like, where did you hear this? Where did you learn this? By being just a connected educator and having the opportunity to see what other people are doing, how other people are thinking, Some of my best friends in the world have come from the fact that we took a risk and we jumped out there and got connected through Twitter or through Voxer or by the blogging world. You end up finding other people with shared interests and passions as you, and then you meet them at ad camps, you meet them at conferences, you find them in random places, you know, sometimes like in an airport or something, because you end up connecting at such a deep level with other people who have a shared heart or mind on different areas that you just feel that vibe with them.
So how did LeadUp Now even come to fruition?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the fall of 2014, I really kind of began my being a connected educator journey. And the process of that, I was able to connect with, through all of that, Dr. Nathan Lang. And the two of us put our heads together and we saw that there were some areas that we thought we could speak into. We saw that this concept of leading up, leading from the middle, and leading down was a voice, perhaps, that was absent at that time from the conversation. And so we attempted to think, okay, where could we put time and space from what we are doing? At that time, he was serving in a large district as a director of curriculum instruction. I was on a campus as an administrator. And so we both brought some really unique perspectives at that time. And so from there, we knew that we wanted to be grounded in a conversation that was attractional to anyone that was just looking to want to grow as a leader. And so we, from there, soft launched a chat and a conversation. And right away, it just resonated with people because we were speaking to the everyday higher level conversations that were important and to people about the profession and being better at what we do. And we wanted every week to get people to think and to do a deep dive into maybe thinking a little bit more at a higher level so that that higher level thinking would have practical implications in the day-to-day work of what they were doing. And they're phenomenal chats that are very, very specific about getting better in one area. But for us, our passion, and it has continued to be our passion now a number of years later, is to be able to appeal to a wide audience with a wide perspective on growing as leaders and feeding both your heart and your mind so that you can hit the office, hit your campus, the playground, wherever you may be on Monday, and to be better than you were when you left there on Friday.
And so in closing, for those starting their leadership journey, what advice do you have for them?
I would say take every opportunity to give yourself some grace and understand that you're going to make some mistakes, that you need to be certain that you surround yourself with at least 2 to 3 other mentors who are safe for you to have conversations with and to be able to problem solve with. There may be those times as a leader where you want to go to those places for venting or for being able to just partly unload all of the multiple thoughts that are going through your mind and understand that a really great place to arrive at is that you're not going to have all the answers. Someone else may, and that in your journey, you will have an obligation and an opportunity at some point to be able to do the same thing for someone else. It's that whole perspective that's out there, and it may be a bit cliche, but I think it is right. Leaders have to fundamentally understand that the process is not a sprint, it's a marathon. I always like to think about my own journey as I am arriving, not yet arrived. That the minute we all think that we're done, I've grown enough as a teacher, I've grown enough as a leader on a campus or in the central office, is one of two things. Either today I'm fooling myself, or maybe if I think I'm at that place, maybe I need to consider something else. We don't want that mindset in our students of like, well, I've learned everything, I'm done. I want to encourage other people and myself to have the mindset that says that there is always something to learn and there is always something to teach.
So how can our listeners connect with you on social media?
There's a variety of ways to be able to do that. I would say the best and most direct way is through Twitter. My handle is @Heffrey. Another way to connect with me is through a blog that both my wife and I share and write together. jhveal.com is a way to do that. Those are probably the two primary ways to stay connected with me, as well as being connected through @LeadUpNow or #LeadUpChat. And whether it's myself or a team of other as from the leadership team, one of us is always on every week as we have our chat on leadership and connecting leaders, because we want to see leaders be better.
And this is probably a shameless plug, but I'm going to do it anyways. Jeff and I are writing a blog series. And so for the listeners, definitely check that out soon. We'll be posting the first blog post in hopefully this week. Please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.